91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour, we begin with discussion of the new Patricia and Philip Frost Museum of Science under construction in Miami within the Museum Park location. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. The stunning new Frost Museum opens in the summer of 2016. We'll learn more from the museum's chief meteorologist, Angela Colbert, and discuss the storm-related exhibit, Feel the Force, Hurricanes and Other Hazards. And more, Linda Gassenheimer goes Brazilian with the culinary director of Texas de Brazil restaurants, Evandro Carignato. He gives tips for incorporating Brazilian flavors in Memorial Day barbecues. Also, Fred Tasker gives his wine suggestions. Topical Currents up next, after the news.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman.
Well, Joe, I've been spending a lot of time at PAM lately. Of course, that's the Perez Art Museum of Miami. And I've been fascinated by the new structure taking shape right next door in the Museum Park location, right in downtown. It's the Patricia and Philip Frost Museum of Science, right on beautiful Biscayne Bay.
Indeed, the new Frost Museum is slated to open about a year from now, and you can see its progress on a live construction camera on the museum's website. I looked at that the other day. It's really cool.
Cool, yeah. Mm-hmm. With us now to tell us more is the Frost Museum Science Curator and Chief Meteorologist, Dr. Angela Colbert. Colbert. It's so hard to say Colbert because we're so used to saying
Colbert.
You must
get a lot of that. You must get a lot of that.
I get a ton of that. And it's only going to get worse now that he's taking over the late night show.
Right, right. So it's Colbert, right?
It is Colbert.
Well, before we get to, we just heard about hurricane season, June 1st, we're counting down the days, and we are going to talk about that, but I just would like to know, as the science curator and chief meteorologist at the Frost Museum, what are your responsibilities? What does that mean?
Yeah, so I actually do quite a bit at the museum. There's a lot of us that are working really hard on the development of the new museum, so we usually have quite a few different job roles, as most people do in any job that they have. You wear a lot of hats.
That's true.
So what I do is I primarily focus on a lot of the programming and special events development that we do. I also work with schools and developing school curriculum, as well as all our signature events. So the one we have coming up, Feel the Force on May 30th, I'm leading the efforts on that one as well. And so in addition to that, I work on the new museum. And for that, I'm developing a lot of content for different galleries and spaces that are expected in the new museum.
So Feel the Force will be kind of the last hurrah for the old museum and by Vizcaya?
It's the last free event for the new this year, and then we have one more after that, which June 13th and 14th will be Miami Underwater Fest.
But
and
wait a
that
minute,
that will be the last.
You have something on the 28th too, though.
Yes, that's part of our Science Up Close series. So before every major event weekend we have, we wanted to introduce more adult programming opportunities where individuals who are interested could really get more in-depth science conversations than you would get on a normal family day during the weekend. So we created Science Up Close because we learned that the best science from those of us that had gone to grad school was over a beer. So that's where that thought process came from.
Okay.
So we're partnered with Wynwood Brewing Company. They provide the beer. We provide the science and the science conversation. And then we also have the Frost School of Music joining us to provide the atmosphere.
The music. Mm-hmm. Sounds cool. Well, as we said, we are counting down the days to June 1st. I'm just wondering, does it indicate anything that we already had that subtropical system, Anna, before the official start of hurricane season?
So it's pretty common to about every 3 to 4 years we get a storm that happens before hurricane season. And it's usually really common that it forms off the east coast of Florida.
It did that during the infamous 2005, I believe.
Yes. So it's really common. It does not indicate
no.
whether we're going to have more or less storms this year. What I usually like to tell people is that it doesn't matter how many storms there necessarily are if one's coming to you, right?
Well, like
so
we know
that's
from
what
Andrew.
Matters. Exactly.
First storm of the season.
So, where are we as far as El Nino in this involvement?
Yeah. We're going into an El Nino, and that's actually really good news for us because the research has shown that during El Nino years, what actually happens is we tend to have less storms. And that's because the wind conditions are actually tearing the storms apart instead of making it easier for them to form and become stronger. So we have less storms. And then we also, my actual personal research.
I'll remember that, putting up shutters.
My personal research found that they actually tend to curve more out into the ocean and stay away from the coast more often.
With the
El Nino years, yes.
Well, you got your PhD from UM's Rosenstiel School of Marine and Atmospheric Science, and your research focused on how climate change affects or impacts hurricanes. So what were your findings? I guess you don't have to do your whole dissertation, but what did you find?
So the bottom line I found was that it was good and bad news
okay.
for us. So the changes were very, very small. So you should always take all the research with, you know, a grain of salt, and that we're still learning a lot all the time. Mm-hmm. And so what I found was that there tended to be less storms that traveled straight from off the coast of Africa due to the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere because it changes the whole circulation that happens. And so there tended to be less storms that traveled straight and entered the Caribbean and the Gulf, where you get some of those really big storms like Katrina. Sometimes they impact us before they make their way to the Gulf. And there tended to be more storms that would curve out into the open ocean. So that sounds good. But the caveat was, is that it looked like it was more of a domino effect, where you had less storms going straight, which meant more kind of curve towards the East Coast. So that number stayed more or less the
same. You mean
same.
The East Coast, the northern...
All of the East Coast.
All of the East Coast.
But like I said, these changes are really small. So I found maybe, you know, one storm a decade. But the thing with that and why it still matters is because if that one storm is the one that hits you, it has a really big impact.
Since we haven't had a big storm here in over 10 years, we have many new residents. How about giving some advice for those new to our area of how they should prepare just generally?
Sure. Next week is actually National Hurricane Preparedness Week. So there's going to be a whole slew of information that you can find through the National Hurricane Center. So their website is nhc.gov. So you can go there to find a lot of information. Also, the American Red Cross has fantastic guides for what you can actually do and what needs to be in an emergency supply kit, as well as Miami-Dade County Emergency Management also has fantastic tools. So they'll actually, all those organizations will be at our Feel the Force event on May 30th.
Oh.
So if you're new to the area, you can come and chat with them, find out if you're in a hurricane evacuation zone, learn about what you need in supply kits. If you can't make it out that day, then you can just go online to their websites and they'll have a checklist that you can check off. My main advice is you never know if a storm's coming and you don't want to be the one that doesn't have water if one comes. So definitely get at least a basic supply kit now while everything's in stock, and then you just have to refresh it each year.
Newbies probably
comes.
Haven't seen the battles in Home Depot over batteries and plywood
right.
and things like that.
And water.
Water, yes.
At the grocery stores.
The grocery stores completely run out of water. And gas. That's one that people often forget about. You want to have a full tank of gas before a storm
cash.
Comes. And some cash. Also, phone chargers that are for your car, not for your house, because you might not have power for a while.
Mm.
Indeed. Tell me a little bit more about Feel the Force, the exhibit that's running now at the Museum of Science by Vizcaya. Take me through it if I were going there. I guess it's interactive. It seems like all the museum exhibits now are interactive. How is this one?
Yeah, so the hurricane exhibits, you're absolutely right. It is interactive. It goes through the story of how we predict hurricanes, so kind of what the science is. You can learn about how they form, what makes them travel, where they go, like what dictates that. You can learn what it's like to fly into a hurricane. We have a P3 cockpit where you can pretend to be the pilot. Mm. And also a video with all the different hurricane hunters that
I
actually
do this. I did that
once
as a journalist. What a trip, yeah.
I've been dying to go. I really,
really.
It really wasn't that bad.
Yeah, that's. I think it depends what storm you fly into, because I've heard some horror stories. Yeah.
Well, it looks like on the 30th, you're having Dr. Frank Marks, and he's director of NOAA's Hurricane Research Division. It said he's flown in and out of the eye of the hurricane over 450 times.
That is absolutely correct.
On my flight, the crew ate pizza before they went. I didn't touch it.
Yeah, I can see why.
That was probably a wise decision. They've actually told me that a lot of the turbulence is worse in the storms that are weaker than stronger.
Why would that be?
And the reason for that is because the weaker storms, they're still forming their organization a little bit more. So they have more of what we call updrafts, which is just this vertical upward motion of the air. And so they have a lot more of those, so they tend to be a lot more turbulent. Like, clouds that are just forming are more turbulent than big thunderstorms that you have a better sense of the structure and can fly through.
Because you know where you can go.
Because you know where you can go.
We're speaking with Dr. Angela Colbert, not Colbert. She's the science curator and the chief meteorologist at the Patricia and Philip Frost Museum of Science, among other things. And we're going to take a short break on today's topical currents. We'll be right back.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Angela Colbert. She's the science curator and chief meteorologist at the Patricia and Philip Frost Museum of Science. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, we're having a rather loose discussion about hurricanes and also the magnificent Frost Science Center, which is under construction at Museum Park in downtown Miami. Our number 1-800-743-9576, or also email. Bonnie will take those. That's radio@wlrn.org.
So sticking with the old Science Museum on South Miami Avenue there, I know summer's a busy time there. What are some of the activities for kids, and when do they have to sign up?
So this is actually our 50th anniversary of our summer camp. Happens to work out that way, which is really a beautiful way to end our whole time over at the area next to Vizcaya in Coconut Grove. And so they'll have a whole variety. What's really cool about this year's summer camp offerings, not so much for the kindergarten through third graders, but the fourth through eighth graders, is we're doing a lot of work to try to test out new ideas that are actually going to go into the new museum. So one of the exciting things they can do is sign up for certain summer camp classes where they'll actually get to give feedback and their thoughts, and it might end up in the new museum. So that's a really cool thing. Summer camp starts June 15th, so they should probably start making sure they have a slot pretty soon.
So if parents are going to have some bored kids around, it might be a good idea.
Yes.
And how do they sign up? What is the website?
So they can just go to our main website. That's miamisci.org. And once they are on there, you'll see a big sign at the front. It says summer camp. You click on it, and it will take you directly to the summer camp page.
So what are some of the new features in the new museum that, I mean, aside from that state-of-the-art full-dome planetarium that we see, but what are some of the other things that we're going to see there?
And that big sphere that's being built.
Yes, the big sphere is going to be the planetarium.
That's the planetarium.
So that's the really iconic thing you think of when you think of the Science Museum.
Yes.
So that's going to be really our staple, and you can project outside onto it, so we can change it into a whole different range of things. Maybe we'll turn it into a basketball when there's a heat game, if the heat are doing well, or, you know, we could take it a tour into the galaxy or something like that. And then actually in the planetarium, the program's going to be not just space anymore, but you can also dive deep into the ocean or into the human body and the brain potentially. Oh. So it'll be really interesting material. The other really strong attraction that I think people aren't expecting from us is we're going to have a brand new Living Core aquarium. So we're actually not just a science center anymore. We're also going to have an aquarium with live animals, sharks, tuna, things like that. It's going to have a 500,000 gallon Gulfstream tank aquarium is the main centerpiece. It's shaped like a martini glass, which works well for Miami, I always think. But really, that's right. But really, it's just because there's no edges that way. So you can really better see the animals and get a better flow of water throughout the system. So on the roof of that aquarium, there's also going to be other aquaria, including coral reef one that looks at the native coral reefs we have here just off our coast in Biscayne Bay National Park, as well as a series of other ones looking at Everglades. We'll have a stingray touch tank, all that kind of fun
stuff.
What's
a stingray touch tank?
You get to
what
touch a stingray.
Like?
Yeah. It's actually, they're really, really sweet and nice. and it's fun. They're slimier than you would think.
Okay.
But so there'll be a whole bunch of different activities like that. And then throughout the galleries, we also will have the People in Science Gallery, which is sponsored by Baptist Health. And that's going to really explore what different choices we make every day and how that impacts our well-being and our happiness.
Talking about like what we eat, if we exercise,
sure.
Our lifestyle.
What you eat, what you exercise, how much sleep you get a night, mm-hmm. But also what connections do you have in your life? Do you do anything that makes you feel good by giving back to the community? How do we learn? How does our brain work with our body, and what impact is that for us? And then also really individualizing it. So what works for you? Because it's different for every person.
Sure.
What works for them? So it explores those different aspects. We will have a Feathers to the Stars gallery, which explores the evolution of flight. So all the way back from, you know, the dinosaurs, where we had, I'm going to get the name wrong, the one that starts with a P. Yeah,
come on, Joe.
Well, it's still related to today's chickens and all the other birds.
Yes. So the one that flew, I apologize that I cannot remember the name.
I'm going to look it up.
Yes, thank you. It's like Tactosaurus or something like that.
Go ahead.
I said it totally wrong. But then also exploring what's in our future. So space flight, is time travel a real possibility? These kinds of questions and aspects. And so it really kind of goes through that whole timeline really beautifully.
As a science curator, how do you come up with the really cool ideas that will appeal to youngsters but also to adults and also have the interactive aspect? Where do you get the ideas?
Pterodactyls.
Pterodactyls.
Okay, yes. PT.
Yes. It's a challenging process, and no one person can do it by themselves. So we're a whole team that really works together to kind of brainstorm different ideas, see what we think.
Just the word I was thinking of. Do you get around and brainstorm?
We do.
Could we? What if?
Yes. So we've gone through a whole series of ideas for all these galleries, and, you know, not everything makes it through. And then we usually also work with some design firm at some point, things like that, to really take it to the next level with the gallery people, that this is their job to think of ideas and how to make them interactive. So we'll have general ideas that we think of and really dive into content that we want to focus on and things that we think might be really cool to explore.
And you get feedback from the kids at summer camp this year.
We do. So we'll get feedback from the kids. We also do surveys.
What are you going to spring on? An example of what you're going to spring on them.
I don't want to give too much away in case they're in my camp. Because there are little guinea pigs. But one of the things, so we're prototyping for the People in Science Gallery, which was the health and choice one. So, you know, it could be something like an activity around digestion and creating a demo for them where they actually get to simulate digestion using different things. Like someone's the chewer and they have to crunch it up. And then, you know, you pour in the acid, like there's acid in our stomachs that dissolves it. And then, you know, it's got to come out the other end. So it could be something like that. And kids love that kind of stuff.
I guess.
Angela, we have food and dining next. Can
yes,
you go
yes.
on to the next?
We'll go on to the next. I want to ask you about the Frost relationship to the Smithsonian. What is it?
So we are an affiliate with the Smithsonian. We were actually the first museum to be an affiliate with the Smithsonian back when they started the program. And so we have a really wonderful working relationship with them. We work with them on a variety of different areas. So sometimes it's, you know, they have something they want, you know, their Curious program, which is Smithsonian Science How. And we've actually taken it to the next level where we bring it out to the schools for them. And so we actually take it out into the schools and show the live webcast that they do at the Smithsonian, showcasing different science and why it's important and things like that. So we have that collaboration among many, 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 many others.
And before you came here today, you said you were at a CBS 4 weather day.
Yes.
What is that? And you said you have another one tomorrow. What are the weather days?
Yeah. So CBS 4 Weather's Day was an event at Marlins Park. They had a variety of different school children come. I'm not sure all the different schools since we didn't organize it ourselves. And it had ourselves as well as NOAA with the Hurricane Research Division, like you had mentioned, Dr. Frank Marks. It wasn't him, but it was their group.
Uh-huh.
And so they were just getting kids excited about weather and prepared for hurricane season this year. So it was really just that kind of fun interaction with them. And then they get to watch a baseball game. So it's fun for them.
Oh, yeah, they have a day game today.
Yeah. Yes.
Which could be a hurricane.
Possibly.
Or something like that. And the other thing I wanted to ask you is, I didn't realize the Science Museum was founded by the Junior League. Do you know the history? That was like in 1939?
Yes.
I think it was over here on Bayshore Drive.
Yes. So we got founded many, many, many years ago. And we moved into the current facility people know, I believe, in the late 50s. And so we were in part founded by a subgroup of the Junior League that then became known as the Patrons that eventually founded and funded the initial new museum back when that one was new.
Right.
That got built and, you know, the iconic Pan Am globe that's in there, and they actually had to cut a hole in the roof to get it in back in the day. So it's really interesting design challenges that they had. And that museum actually has changed a lot. So we've been doing a series in our last year there where we've gone on social media and been posting about these old pictures that we found of the Science Museum back way back when, and it used to look totally different than it does now. And so it was really fascinating because it used to have like an all glass entrance, and now it got designed more in the style of Vizcaya to match that whole area.
I see. Actually, it's 1949.
That sounds about right.
Yes, yeah. 1949.
Dr. Okay. Angela Corbett, how did your career path start? Where did it begin?
Oh, mine's such a weird one. So I was always fascinated by the weather as a kid. And I actually was the weirdo that during lightning storms would run outside instead of inside, which you're not supposed to do at all.
Your mom probably wasn't too happy about that.
Probably not. And so I was always fascinated. But then I took a physics class in high school. And I didn't get the grade I wanted, so I got scared that I couldn't do physics. So I was like, well, then I can't do meteorology. I can't study weather. So I actually did my undergrad degree in mathematics education and became a teacher. And so then I decided that that wasn't the best fit for me. I still really loved weather, so I wanted to go back into it. So I went to the University of Miami, and I got my graduate degree in meteorology and physical oceanography. And I was doing the research and I was like, you know what? I love talking to people. I need to get a job where I can interact with people and really be social with people. And it just so happened that my boss at the museum contacted my advisor at the time because they were looking for someone to develop a new hurricanes exhibit. And I happen to have that expertise. And so stars aligned. And I ended up at the museum, and they liked me, so they kept me around after I graduated.
How long have you been there?
I've been there almost 3 years now.
Great. Well, I just want to reiterate that Science Up Close is Thursday, May 28th, 6:30 at the Museum of Science, and Feel the Force, Hurricanes and Other Hazards, Family Day, is Saturday, May 30th, and that starts at 11 in the morning.
Correct.
And again, the website?
MiamiSci.org. And you can find more information about both of those events. You can RSVP to the Thursday night events and find out about everything else we're doing the rest of the summer.
And the summer camp.
Yes, you can.
Well, Dr. Angela Colbert serves as the science curator and is the chief meteorologist at the Patricia and Philip Frost Museum of Science. It's been a pleasure having you with us.
Thank you so much.
Glad you made it in the field you love.
Yeah, it
worked
out.
And thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Food and Dining up next. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Thursday has arrived, Bonnie. We talked about hurricanes. Now we're going to talk a little bit more about the Memorial Day weekend. Of course, chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer has some input on the culinary aspects of the holiday we're coming up on. And Linda, as usual, it's a 50% chance of rain forecast for most of the weekend.
No, it isn't. It's going to be beautiful. We all know that.
That's your guarantee.
It's absolutely.
Okay. Well,
and hello, Bonnie.
Hello.
Nice to be with you,
hello,
too.
Linda.
Bonnie, you and I have a nice forecast, right?
That's right. And we could have just asked Dr. Colbert.
Yeah, we forgot.
Okay.
The meteorologist. But
all right.
We'll say it's good.
I'm telling you, it's going to be great weather.
Okay.
I'm thinking of barbecue this weekend.
All for that.
And I was thinking maybe having a barbecue with a Brazilian touch. So here to tell us more about a Brazilian barbecue is Evandro, and I'm going to say his name correctly, I hope, Evandro Carignato.
Thank you. That's correct.
Okay, I got it. Carignato. He's the culinary director for the restaurant Texas de Brazil, and he's also giving us some other special grilling tips. So welcome, Evandro.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me here today.
Wonderful, especially since he's filled the studio with some wonderful food.
Was it good, huh?
Yeah.
Also with us is Fred Tasker, our favorite wine guy. He's joining us by Skype. Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes columns. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I think I'll try to figure out what kind of wine would go well with Brazilian food. You might be surprised.
Oh, I'm never surprised with you, Fred. Also, you can read Fred's wine column in Saturday's Miami Herald. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any grilling questions or maybe some tips for us? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. And Bonnie, you're eating, but while you're eating, would you please give out the email?
Radio at WLRN.org. Is that a banana? Radio at WLRN.org.
Okay, right. Evandro, Brazilian barbecue. What makes a Brazilian barbecue different from a regular one?
Well, in Brazil, it's a completely different kind of steakhouse you would find. Everybody knows that in South Brazil, actually more Argentina, Uruguay, everybody knows that those parts of the world has great, great beef. But South Brazil, Rio Grande do Sul, that's the state where I'm from, we share the same geographic region. That's called Pampas. And we have so much cow, good quality cow. So we became, churrasco or a steak Brazilian style is the only thing we eat there. But the steak, churrascaria, is a word for a gaucho steakhouse, and differs a little bit.
All right, let's talk about a few things. Number one, what's a gaucho?
Well, a gaucho is anyone that's born in Rio Grande do Sul, South Brazil, is called a gaucho. I'm a gaucho. We have many other...
not the word for a cowboy.
It's very close, but nowadays anyone born in South Brazil is called, that's the way they call itself themselves, gauchos. But we also have like many hundred years ago, we had the Indians living there. They're called gauchos.
And now tell us what is a churrascaria.
Well, churrascaria, so it's a Brazilian steakhouse. that in Brazil we don't find American style steakhouses. You don't order one steak. Everything comes to your table. We don't have menu. You don't have to worry about what you're going to be ordering. All the cuts, they are brought to your table. We cook over open flame, and it's a table side service. One fixed price, you can sample everything we have to offer.
And that's not just in Texas to Brasilia restaurant. It's in all Brazilian restaurants.
Yes,
that's what happens.
Yes, you cannot be called.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you cannot be called a churrascaria if you don't have that style of service.
Isn't that like they do Argentinian restaurants?
No,
that's different.
That's a la carte. You're going to be ordering a steak, and they bring that to your table.
I see.
With us, we don't have a menu. They're very similar. We still cook using charcoal, hardwood, over open flame, but it's a little bit different.
So you have people walking around with various meats, and you say, oh, I'll take a little of that and a little of this.
Yes, they stop by at your table, and they're going to offer to you lamb chops, and you're going to say yes or no. Next cut can be filet mignon or
chicken. And it comes on a big, huge skewer. I mean, not just a skewer. I mean, a spear.
Yeah, it's about 3 feet long.
Well, and so then what's a rodizio?
Rodizio is an endless service. It means that all the meats, they're going to be going around the dining room in an endless service. Endless and
random. Endless. So just endless. Yes. Oh, I've got you. Okay. Endless service. Wow. All right. So now I want to make a steak Brazilian style. Are there special spices? I mean, what do you do?
Well, that's interesting because a lot of people, they go to Texas Brazil, they love the beef. And remember, we do lamb, chicken, sausage, beef, pork. We do several different cuts. And we just don't do the chicken hearts. That in Brazil, they're big, big time, but here it didn't work very well, the chicken hearts.
Good.
But they are tasty. But the thing is, people, they want to buy the seasoning. They tell us, can you sell the seasoning? We don't have any seasoning for the beef. All we use is kosher salt. Is a kind of a Brazilian salt that we have, and the flavor comes from the good quality beef and the charcoal we use. There is a lot of smoke.
Is this the good grass-fed beef?
Not here. The beef we buy in the States is corn-fed. In South America, yeah, it's going to be grass-fed, but not the American.
So, you know, I was looking at your website, and it sounds as if you have a salad bar. Is that true?
Yes, all the churrascarias, most of them, they're going to have it's a salad bar. It's like a little bit more gourmet than what you'd find in other places, but yes, it's a salad bar.
So you could be a vegetarian and go along with your meat-eating friends.
Yes, and we have two different prices, one for the full service, all the meat, and the salad bar, and we have also a light dinner, lunch, that we pay pretty much a half of the price, and you only gonna have the salad bar.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to get back to your cuts of meats and all, but before I do, we have a lot of meat right here in the studio we're eating. Tell us, what are we eating?
Well, I brought a few samples. One of them is the picanha. Picanha is the most popular cut. A lot of people, when they're not familiar
with... That's a piece of meat by the steak.
Yes, picanha comes from the top sirloin. And we have a lot of people, they think, well, all we're going to eat there at Texas Brazil is going to be filet mignon, the tenderloin. But once they try the picanha, that's their favorite cut right there. It's a really, really good cut.
So, and then also there's a sausage here.
Sausage.
Yeah. Spicy one.
Yeah, chicken pork is made in Texas with our recipe. We have chicken breast wrapped in bacon, flank steak. We didn't bring it here, but we also have lamb chops, leg of lamb, Parmesan pork loin, chicken drumstick.
We missed out.
Linda, would you believe I like the bacon wrapped chicken?
No. With bacon?
With bacon?
Like it? Who would have ever thought of that?
Oh, my goodness.
I can't imagine.
Well, it's your happy day. Mm-hmm. But also, there's potatoes here. There's black beans and rice. There's a lot of food.
Like scallop potatoes.
Yes. The way it works, the meat, they're going to bring all the meat to your table.
Yeah.
The server going to bring a few side dishes. What we have the fried bananas that you sample here. We have the cheese bread, Brazilian cheese bread. It's like a dinner roll with a lot of cheese, very gooey.
Bread, he's saying, not bread.
Bread. And we also have the mashed potato. But on the salad bar, you're going to have many, many salads from asparagus, hot items like lobster bisque, sauteed mushrooms. There are an infinity number of items that going to be self-service. You go to the salad bar and you serve yourself.
And also, the bananas aren't what most of us in Miami might be used to, because when we fry bananas, it's usually plantains.
Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me in Brazil you don't have plantains?
No, I never seen a plantain in Brazil. It may have in some parts of the country, but everybody knows is the bananas.
So these are... But they must have been cooked when they're a little bit green because they're still firm.
Yes, it has to be. If they're a little ripe, they're going to fall apart. They're going to be too soft. So they has to be, call green tips.
Green tips.
So the banana has green tips. And then
it's
cooked, what, in butter and cinnamon?
No, deep fried. Mm.
Oh, it's deep fried?
Yeah. But they don't absorb any fat, so it's kind of healthy. And we rolled it in sugar and cinnamon.
You taste the cinnamon, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Fat or no fat, it's really delicious, I must
say. It was.
Okay, so now let's get back to these cuts of meat.
Because
you said that you don't use any seasoning, just kosher salt, which we can all buy kosher salt. But it's the cut of meat that makes the difference. Can we buy a cut of meat like that? What do we buy when we go to the store?
Yeah, you're going to have to walk around. You're going to have to know some butchers. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to find exactly the same cuts that we use. But like one of the, especially here in Florida, one cut that everybody loves is the flap meat. Is similar to the flank steak and the skirt steak. It's just a little bit thicker. So if you cannot find the flap meat,
you're saying flap, F-L-A-P.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can substitute with the flank steak or the skirt steak. And what we do, we try to buy meat with a good aging, at least 21, 30 days at least. And choice or higher has to be. So that's going to help.
Choice or higher being premium.
Prime. Yes.
So, but you're talking about aging.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can't age it at home. We can find some markets here do have aged meat, but that's a dry age. And you mentioned before the show, you mentioned to me a wet aging. What is that?
The wet, it comes in the meat we buy is a wet age processing. The meat comes in a vacuum pack, cryovac.
Like a cryovac pack?
Yes.
So, it's a cryovac pack, and to age it, you just leave it in the pack? That's
yes.
it?
Is it in a brine or something?
No, it's the juices, the meat juices.
Oh, okay.
It stay there. And if we write the temperature, we can 60, 75 days, it's still going to be perfect, going to be really good. Ooh.
So when most meat you see coming into the market is cryovac. I mean, most supermarkets, they don't butcher a cow. It comes already butchered for them, and they're in cryovac packages. But they don't keep it very long, I suppose, because they sell it right away.
Mm-hmm.
If we wanted to age the meat ourselves, could we?
Can, but I just want to go to the details. I can get in trouble with the health department. I suggest you go online, you do some Google. Yes, there are ways you can do at home, but it's a little tricky. It's not that easy. The meat, because you have to understand, as the meat gets tender, it starts getting a little bit spoiled. So it gets to a point that's going to be more spoiled than tender.
Yeah.
So you have to understand how to work with that. But it's the same, if you know a little bit about the dry aging, it's the same process. Like if you see a piece of meat that's a dry age, you're going to have mold, you're going to have shrinkage. It looks a little nasty. They're going to have to trim all that cut to serve it.
Okay. So, we need to go for a break. I'm having so much fun with this meat. I forgot about the break. We're talking about Brazilian barbecue, and we're going to take a short break here and be back with more. We're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Texas to Brazil Culinary Director Evandro Carignato. I got that right again?
Yes.
Yes? All right. And he's been giving us tips on how to create our own Brazilian-style barbecue, and I think the first tip is we've got to go find a good piece of meat.
That's correct.
Right. Okay. Well, if you're not going to be cooking out and you want to have a real quick and easy dinner in minutes this weekend or at any time, I have a smoky chicken and three bean salad, and you can buy cooked chicken strips if you want, or you can make your own chicken, either way. And what I've done is I take the strips and I toss them a little ground cumin and then chipotle-flavored vinaigrette dressing. Now, you can make your own dressing, or you can buy a dressing and add some, you can buy adobe chipotle peppers and adobo sauce. You can buy that in the supermarket in a can, but you can also they have a ground chipotle spice in the spice section, and that's really great, easy, simple, and you can put that into your sauce, into your vinaigrette, and toss the chicken in. That makes it really easy. I put green beans in the salad, and I just cook those for a couple of minutes in the microwave, and then I add also some chickpeas and some other seasonings to it, and then I toss that all in the dressing. And that makes your salad. So really simple and easy.
Sounds delicious.
Sounds delicious. Okay, good. Also, I forgot to tell you, it's red kidney beans is the other one. So it's chickpeas, red kidney beans, green beans, and the chicken and chipotle sauce. Sounds good, huh?
Oh, yeah, it'll be very nice with the Brazilian steak.
Okay. Well, with that, we're going to have a toasted baguette with some Parmesan cheese, and that's the complete meal. If you want the recipe and a photo, that's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Okay, Fred, Brazilian wines.
That's right. What kind of wine goes well with Brazilian food is the question. And the answer is that, Brazilian wine.
Okay.
But you might say that Brazil is too hot for wine because it's right on the equator. But if you do say that, you're wrong. Brazil is actually a very long country. It's 2,600 miles long. And it has a wine country that's 1,800 full miles south of the equator and 2,000 feet up in the Gaucho mountain range, where nights are cold and the sun is bright and conditions are okay for growing grapes and making wine.
And you know, that's my home state, is where I came from.
Actually, I heard you talking about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're probably going to be talking about the Vale dos Vinhedos, is Bento Gonçalves, Caxias do Sul, Farroupilha. There are several towns there with a very, very strong Italian influence.
I guarantee if I do say that, I won't have that proper pronunciation.
Well, I have to say some words with a proper pronunciation here.
In fact, this is about the same latitude as some of the wine country in Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay, so there's no reason they can't make good grapes. Now, the people of that region came from Italy in the 1870s, and they brought their wine traditions with them, and they set up a pretty big wine industry. Brazil today has 25 million residents of Italian heritage. And they make a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Chardonnay. And they even have a Festa da Uva grape festival.
And he's sitting here nodding his head because that's his hometown.
Yeah, that's my hometown as well.
Isn't that great? They also make sparkling wine, which ranges from fully dry to very sweet dessert wines. And a lot of Brazilians prefer dessert wines and sweet wines, but they know that the international market wants dry wines, so they're making those as well now. They're only recently coming into the United States, and some of them are kind of works in progress, but some are pretty good. I tasted a few of them several years ago, and they were nice. There was a nice Casa Valduga Cabernet Sauvignon that was big and rich and just right for that big Brazilian beef. And there was an Aurora Winery Muscatel sparkling wine that was sweet and grapey with hints of orange, and it was a lot like an Asti Spumante from Italy. And there are also something that would be unusual for Americans, for the U.S. people, there are semi-sweet Chardonnay wine with lemon and pineapple flavors. And that's not exactly to my taste, but I know that I'm learning more and more that even Americans often like sweet wine if they can only work up the courage to admit it.
So, Fred, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
The question would be for Evandro. Do you serve any Brazilian wines?
In some markets, yes. You know, importing wines from Brazil is not always easy, but we have some locations we have Brazilian wines. But we have a lot of, from Chile and Argentina, and of course from California as well in Europe. But
yeah, I saw on your website that you have a special on South American wines.
Yes, we are very strong in South American wines.
Okay. Bonnie, did you have an email?
We did. This is for Evandro. It's from Lauren. Found a picanha.
Yes.
Picanha.
That's a beef cut.
In a Brazilian grocery store. What is the best way to cook it at home? We grilled it to a medium rare. It was a bit tough, but tasted fantastic.
Yes. Well, there are a few things. The picanha, if you have a rotisserie grill, or even you can do a grill, but I do sometimes in the oven inside the house. It looks very good. You go very, very hot, the temperature, the fat up, sitting up. Very, very hot, the grill. You're going to have like that nice, because it has a cap of fat, the picanha, and a good seasoning. It used to be very heavily seasoned with salt. And so in the oven, very hot, I would say broiler 500 degrees, you're going to have that nice and gold crust. Now you go down the temperature to 175, 200 for a few more minutes. You're going to be perfectly cooked, medium inside, with that nice crust on the outside.
And it won't be, because I guess she was saying it was
tough. There are two things. If you have to know how you're going to cut the against the grain. You have to be against the grain, going to be much more tender. And the aging plays a good role, as we were saying
earlier. She's got to ask if it's aged to her Brazilian.
Yeah.
The Brazilian grocer. We have another call here on line one. We have Marcus in Deerfield. Hello, Marcus. You're on the air. Are you with us, Marcus?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure, we can.
Okay. Let me just... Thank you. I live in Deerfield, which, as most of us locals out here know, is Little Brazil.
Little
it's
Brazil.
The largest ethnic community.
Ah, Deerfield, here in Florida.
Yeah.
Deerfield and Pompano.
Pompano, yes. A lot of Brazilians there.
Yeah, this whole area, you know, I grew up in Miami, traveling to Brazil all of my life, to Niterói, which is across the bay from Rio de Janeiro.
Yes.
And, you know, I grew up with the churrascaria-style restaurant, which I'm so sorry that even you guys have a very upscale class of service, and I've been in the food industry, and I understand the cost of food prevents the original style, which you remember everybody sat down, and things were immediately brought to the table. Cut off the beans, the rice, French fries, you know. It was just, it was such a unique experience never existed here.
So, Marcus, did you have a question for Evandro?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
yes,
what is it?
Love to have an upscale restaurant like Texas do Brasil up here, but we don't.
Yeah.
But where are they located in Florida?
We have here. How soon? You know, how soon before you open up here?
Well, we have several in the Miami area. We have in Palm Beach Garden. We have in Hallandale. We have in Fort Lauderdale, Miami Beach, and one of these days we just opened a few weeks ago, actually, in Dadeland. I know it's not in Pompano, their field, but we are looking at that area as well.
So there are plenty of opportunities.
Yes.
There's plenty of options. And the price varies, does it?
Yes, every market has it can be a little bit more, a little bit less, but the average is very close, the price.
About $45.
$45, $45.
That per person. And that's
that allows
meal.
You for everything,
yes.
All the meat and the salad, side dishes. The only thing that's not included, dessert and beverage.
Okay. Okay. Now, we've talked a lot about South Brazil and your Gaucho area. And I just want to leave that area for a few minutes and talk a little bit more about Brazilian food. In the other areas, you mentioned that there's a type of vinaigrette and a Brazilian vinaigrette.
Yes. And if you want to do like a Brazilian barbecue.
Yeah, right.
The meat, you know, it's pretty much, there is nothing special. You know, like, there is no different seasonings, different techniques for the Brazilian steak. It's just the way we serve on the skewers, table side, that for most of our listeners is going to be a little bit more difficult. But one thing that goes very, very well, that's very Brazilian, we do it's a kind of a salsa with tomatoes, onions, vinegar, oil, and dry oregano, some seasonings, and that goes very, very well with the beef, especially if you like beef a little bit on the well-done side, so that's going to give a lot of moisture.
Okay, and you don't ever marinate it?
No beef, no beef. Pork, lamb, and chicken, yes.
You do marinate?
Yes.
And this kind of onion and vinegar?
Actually, it's a little bit different, and that's the same marinade my grandfather was doing. The whole family goes back many, many generations. Everything we do at Tex Brasil has a large tradition. It's always the marinade for those cuts, beef, pork, and chicken. No, sorry, beef, pork, chicken, and lamb.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Always wine, garlic, rosemary, sage, and a few other seasonings.
Okay. We only have about 30 seconds, but Texas de Brasil. Where's the Texas from?
The name came from? Well, it's originally, but Texas and Brazil, they share the same love for beef, great steak. So we have the hospitality of the Texans people, you know, the state of Texas, with the kind of concept from Brazil.
Okay, so they brought it all together.
They combined two names.
Well, this has been a really, really tasty week. Evandro Carignetto, Culinary Director of Texas de Brasil. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Very glad to be here.
Thanks
great
for bringing
food.
Everything.
Yes. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Have a nice Memorial Day weekend, Fred.
Same to you. Have a good time.
Thank you.
Eat some beef.
I think we might.
Absolutely.
Joe Cooper and Bonnie Berman, you ate very well today.
Yes, we did.
Thank you.
Yes. And next week we'll be talking with Dan Churchill. He's an Australian TV star, and he's the author of Dude Food, A Guy's Guide to Cooking Food. Guys, get ready to cook. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for tuning in. Please have a nice weekend. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads of this and previous programs at our website, WLRN.org. Monday is Memorial Day. We hope you make it a good one.
And a safe one.
We'll make way for a special history documentary about how American attitudes and customs about death have evolved. But next Tuesday, Bonnie and I are back at your service with South Florida gardening tips. Of course, we'll have experts on hand. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.
About 2% of the nation's population lost their lives in the American Civil War. In today's numbers, that would amount to 6 million people. About half those soldiers were never identified.
The United States was a nation of mourners. It was a nation of people who were left with these incomplete stories.
On the next episode of Backstory, how we've lived with the dead throughout American history.
Join us Monday, May 25th at 1 p.m. here on 91.3 WLRN.
It's South Florida's NPR News Station, 91.3 WLRN HD1 Miami-Fort Lauderdale to the Palm Beaches, and 91.5 WKWM HD1 Marathon to Key West. Paul Leary wishing you a great afternoon. It's 2 o'clock.